Welcome to JGL Law for You. This podcast is sponsored by Joseph Greenwald and Lake, a suburban Maryland law firm that has been representing clients throughout the D.C. metropolitan area and across the country for close to 50 years. JGL Law for You is a podcast by lawyers, but not for lawyers only. On JGL Law for You, we will bring you up close and personal with our lawyers and some special guests who will be discussing how to navigate the many legal processes, developments in the law, other current events, and how they may affect you, your family, or your business. Today, we're talking with Rama Taib Lopez, an attorney with JGL, and our topic today is particularly timely. It's one for separated and divorced parents with children, co-parenting in the COVID era. Rama is a senior counsel at JGL. She's been practicing law for about 10 years now. Her primary practice area is family law, though she has past experience doing immigration and criminal defense work. She's a graduate of the University of Maryland and a Maryland native. She went to high school in Montgomery County, went to college at the University of Maryland College Park. So Rama, like me, is a Maryland Terrapin through and through. Welcome, Rama. You've got two young children, I understand. Must be difficult at home, working primarily from home.
Hi, David. Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it certainly has presented a challenge, something that I think all parents can relate to at this time.
Let's talk about that. And let's start with a question I know you have gotten and I have certainly gotten as someone else who does a lot of family law work. And that is, do court orders apply in family cases during the pandemic, during this period of time?
So, yeah, the short of it is yes. The judiciary, at least in Montgomery County, issued a statement concerning families and children. And this was issued about 2 weeks into COVID, or 2 weeks into the COVID shutdown, stating that all court orders for a child's custody, parenting time, and child support are still in effect. However, they did leave room in their statement saying that these parents can change and adjust their shared parenting responsibilities in ways that they agree are best for the children. So in the event that custodians are able to agree, that they can adjust their court orders. However, it made very clear that if custodians are not able to reach an agreement regarding any changes, whether it be pertaining to custody, visitation, or child support, the court order that is in effect still controls.
All right, but Rama, let's be realistic for a second. Let's say you've got a client, right, who her former spouse, let's just call her Jane, and her former spouse wants to have his kids for the weekend. But he works in construction. He doesn't pay attention to social distancing. He's going out with his friends. Your client knows all of that. The court order says he gets the kids every weekend, say from Thursday to Monday, or every other weekend, I should say. And your advice to your client is going to be what? Just you got to send them, or you know, what do you tell your client?
Well, my advice to the client is to communicate with the other parent to make sure that your efforts to resolve this discrepancy in terms of what socially distant measures that they're taking has been made. Has an effort been made to resolve this, to kind of get on the same page with socially distant precautions and understand exactly what that other parent is doing?
And I know what he's doing, right? I say to you, I know what he's doing. He was out last night till 12:30 drinking with his buddies in a restaurant that's open, and they're all hanging out together. And then he's going over his friend's house to play cards. And that's what he does every weekend. And I don't want my kids to go. I'm afraid they're going to catch something. And he works in construction every day. So I mean, I'm supposed to live up to that order? Is that what I'm supposed to do? I mean, it's a tough question, right?
It's absolutely a tough question. And I can tell you that a number of parents are finding themselves in that situation. The, you know, one thing is, the courts have made it very clear that the court order controls. You have a situation where, okay, well, we have to maybe make a last minute change, or you have to make a game time decision when you get this information that the other parent isn't respecting the socially distant precautions, the socially distant recommendations, or not taking the precautions that they're supposed to be taking. And in that event, you as a parent need to make a decision that you believe is in the best interest of your children. What I would tell a client, however, is to make sure that they document the efforts that they've made to get on the same page with the other parent. Because I was just in court on an issue very similar to this, except, and I'll tell you the background of it very briefly, where I had a client who wasn't seeing their child because the other parent decided that the child needed to live with them indefinitely until this passed. That parent, the other parent in this case, made a unilateral decision that it was in the best interest of the child to live with them until this whole thing passed, because our client was an essential employee and had to go out into the real world to work and had a heightened level of exposure to COVID. Well, I can tell you that one of the biggest factors when we presented this issue to the court, when we presented it to the judge really wanted to see what efforts were made to communicate, what efforts were made to make adjustments. So that's what I would tell my client. I understand you're going to apply your common sense. And if you're going to make a decision like this, protect it as much as possible and document the efforts that you've made. Because at the end of the day, you're still joint custodians, and parents are not going to see eye to eye on everything. They're not going to see eye to eye on the socially distant measures necessarily that they should be taking. Maybe one parent wants to schedule play dates and the other parent doesn't. At the end of the day, these parents need to show that they've made an attempt to communicate before making the next step or taking that big leap in keeping the child away.
All right. And Rama, what about child support? You know, where you have folks that are laid off or they're furloughed or they're fired, or, you know, they're not making what they're making or not making anything, or even and these days, folks who may have been on unemployment for a while, or at least had some money coming in. Now the unemployment has run out. You know, do those people still have to pay child support?
Right. So that Maryland judiciary statement that I referenced earlier applies to child support as well, that the court order is still in place. However, child support, I mean, again, like custody, is always modifiable. So I would advise a client, if you find yourself in a position where you've been furloughed or laid off, file a motion to modify child support right away, because you don't know if this is going to last another 1 or 2 months, or if this is something that you're going to experience a setback for the next year or two. So file a motion to modify child support right away, because that will preserve your position and assist in the event that your motion gets granted. It can be applied retroactively.
However, that's what I was going to ask you. So if you were to file something, right, you know, today or tomorrow, or had a client that filed something to modify their child support payment, how long is it take them to get into court? I assume it's going to be a while. And then is
absolutely.
It possible that if they do get it reduced, can it be reduced back to when they asked for it to be reduced?
It can be. Absolutely. It can be retroactive to the date that they filed. Of course, you know, that's all essentially up to the court's discretion. By the time you get to court in front of a judge, it's up to the judge's discretion to determine if that retroactivity is in the best interest of the child. But I can tell you that, again, when we're talking about common sense, if a parent has been laid off or furloughed, or if they've had to take a pay cut, or if they've been on unemployment and not earning as much, that parent, what they should be doing, I'm not saying don't pay any child support. Pay as much as you can. Pay as much as you can to the custodial parent. Because again, regardless of how much you're making, you know, those children, whether it's a child or multiple children, still need their needs to be met. And as long as the court sees that you're making as much of an effort as you can, then you're putting yourself in a good position for it to be retroactive and to avoid any petitions for contempt down the line if the custodial parent files a petition for contempt and arguing that you're not obeying by the child support order.
And so that we're clear, you're talking about the law in Maryland, which is primarily where you practice, right?
Correct.
And so if I'm someone who's listening in Missouri or Texas or wherever else, is it possible that the law in my state differs from the law where you're practicing?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. It varies from state to state. And that's, I guess, one of the distinctions between family law and something like constitutional law is it varies from state to state. It's not a federal issue. And certainly talk to an attorney in your state.
What about when folks won't return children? Let's go back to our example of Jane and whoever dad's name was. I can't remember what his name was. We'll call him Tom for this particular example. And, you know, so Tom's got his kids for the weekend and he says, you know, I'm going to keep them till Tuesday because they haven't been with me in a while and I want to keep them till Tuesday and, you know, I'll bring them back Tuesday or then Thursday or whatever the case may be. What do you, if you're a custodial parent in that circumstance, given the fact that courts have been backlogged and closed and things of that nature, what do you do to try to help your client in that instance?
Well, first and foremost, and I've touched on this before, is communication. You got to communicate with the other parent. And if that's not getting anywhere, then lawyer up, right? Get an attorney who is going to write them, you know, a very, very strongly worded letter, okay, that if they continue this behavior, that this isn't going to, because you don't want to end up getting in a ping pong match with the other parent. You don't want this to continue. You don't want to end up holding the kids for a few more days in retaliation, and then that thereby the other parent will do the same thing. So you want to nip it in the bud. So you lawyer up, have them write a strongly worded letter, and especially because the courts are really backed up right now, I would suggest going to mediation. Find out what the underlying issue is. What is the problem? What is going on? Why is this other parent engaging in this behavior? What can we do to cut it out? So let's find out what the root of the problem is.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because you mentioned this communication issue, and obviously these folks wouldn't be apart for the most part if they got along perfectly, most of them anyway. So when you talk about communication to clients who probably may roll their eyes a little bit with you at first, right? Because, you know, they don't communicate well, whatever it is. So or worse, yeah, roll their eyes or say things that they shouldn't say, whatever the case may be. You know, what tactics, what strategies would you suggest they employ to try to reopen those gates of communication, those lines of communication?
Right. So first and foremost is be very direct and simple. Try and keep any past issues that you've had in terms of barriers to your communication with your former partner, you know, to an absolute minimum. I find even in my own relationship that bringing up the past isn't helpful, right? This is an issue, you know, with not only with, you know, couples who are now apart, who are separated or divorced, but even within couples who are still married, right? So you have to really hone in on those effective communication skills. Be very direct, be very simple, try and keep the past out of the current issue and really focus in on what is it that you all are trying to accomplish. So like I say, I try to keep email or the text message, however these parents are typically communicating with one another. If they communicate best via text message, continue to do that. Email, continue to do that. By phone, please. If that's the best way that you all communicate, continue to do that. But keep it focused on the issue in front of you. Try not to resolve three or four issues all at once. Focus on the most important issue. Try and resolve any difference in opinion you have regarding that, and then move on to the next.
With school starting, you know, this in the next week or 10 days for most kids across the country, if it hasn't started already, both private and public schools now, and most of the schools, right, that we know about, some are in-person learning or on-campus learning, whatever it's called, but many are done remotely, like we're doing today, the Zoom session. And so what do you do as a parent to try to ensure that when your child is with the other parent, that your child still has access to what he or she needs to have access to when it comes to school assignments, participating in class, and that sort of thing?
So again, I know I feel like I am, you know, just repeating myself here, but it really is important that parents coordinate their efforts and figuring out what resources do I have and what resources does the other parent have. And that requires you all to have an open communication about what's available. And honestly, in situations like this, I want to say that this has, you know, I understand that we as parents in all familial situations have a difficult time sometimes communicating. But this situation is complete. This, you know, is truly unprecedented. We've never seen anything like this. And it's now more important than ever, that parents work together and coordinate their effort for the betterment of their children. Now, we know that children are resilient, but their worlds have turned upside down, and now they're going to go back to school again in a virtual learning situation. So they have to pull their resources, figure out, what do you have? What do I have? What's going on with you during the week? What's going on with me? You know, am I better able to care for the children during the week because I have greater flexibility at work? Or do you have a better situation at your home because you have grandma or grandpa who can step in and, you know, monitor the children while they are virtual learning so that we both can get work done? All of these are the different types of conversations that parents should be having. And they need to be having an honest and candid discussion because, again, this is completely unprecedented. And one thing that I would note is if parents are truly reluctant to give and take in this way because they're afraid of how this could end up a year or two from now with the other parent trying to use it in court. If you agree that if you are, for example, the custodial parent, you have primary custody, but you're in a situation where it really does make sense for the other parent to have the kids Monday through Friday or what have you, then you and that other parent can reach an agreement that this is a temporary situation, that neither of you are going to use this in court for any reason to modify custody or child support down the road. So you should try and eliminate all barriers to the parents working together to make sure that the kids are learning in the best environment possible.
And you mentioned very briefly, and we're getting to the end of our time here, you mentioned the possibility of mediation, of using, I guess, a third party to help these communication issues. What does that look like in this COVID environment?
Well, it's absolutely been great. I mean, the courts have really encouraged folks to mediate because they know, they are well aware that there's a backlog and families need immediate assistance. They need immediate resolutions. So attorneys, retired judges have all been participating in mediation via Zoom or other video conferencing platforms, and they've been really effective. It's amazing what you can accomplish. You can all, I mean, and these platforms have been very flexible. You can have it where all parties are participating in a conversation, and a mediator or the retired judge who's acting as a mediator can still facilitate the parties in reaching resolution by creating these separated conference rooms or video conference rooms, if you want to call it that, video conference rooms, so that the mediator can speak to their client, their attorney, and have a separate conversation in private. So these mediations have, I mean, this is one thing that technology has really surprised us all during this period, how much we can still get accomplished being remote. And this is one of those areas where we found that mediations can still continue and be successful through remote videos.
All right. So communication, right? Communication is the key.
Number one.
Flexibility, right?
Absolutely.
And if you need a lawyer, call one, I guess, is the last piece of the last takeaway.
Sure. And a lawyer can help get you through both the first two steps as well. So if you need to have a lawyer who can help you talk through your options, absolutely contact me.
And I want to thank you so much for joining us today. This has been great. If someone were to reach out to you and talk with you about these issues or any other family law matter, what's the best way to get hold of you?
The best way to get a hold of me is by email. My email is RTABLOPEV@JGLlaw.com.
Thanks again, Rama, and thanks to all of you out there for listening in. Please join us for our next episode. I'm David Bullitt. This is JGL Law for You.